Welcome to Messy,
Sexy,
Me.
This is Quincy,
Jesse,
and Nikki.
Don't tune in if you're perfect.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Messy, Sexy, Me. As always, I'm joined with my co-hosts, Quincy and Jesse.
Hello.
You ladies doing good? Ready to talk some tech today?
Let's chat.
Usually on our podcast, we talk about dating and sex and lifestyle. The last couple of topics have ranged anywhere from a smart vibrator, the first dating app, a chaotic singles party, to talking about toxic behaviors. But lifestyle is a huge part of our podcast. And right now, you can't talk about lifestyle without talking about AI. Generative AI, and more specifically, ChatGPT. So we're so excited to bring on our next special guest, Keith Koo. And I will say, Keith, I asked ChatGPT to generate an intro for you. So I'm going to actually read it, and you can let me know how accurate it is. We want to welcome Keith Koo. Oh, wait, that is the one that I wrote. The one I wrote, I think, is cool. The one I wrote is cool. But let me pull up ChatGPT. Okay, so this is so strange, but reading it in real time. Today, we are thrilled to have Keith Koo, founder and managing partner of Guardian Insight Group, to join us. Keith is a tech industry veteran who has dedicated his career to identifying, assessing, controlling, and mitigating risks associated with doing business with technology companies and vendors. So we're talking financial, blockchain, pricing costs, cyber, information security, business resiliency, and now ChatGPT. In addition to his work with Guardian Insight Group, Keith is also the creator and host of the Silicon Valley Insider radio show and podcast. So just like us, we have a fellow podcast host and creator with us. I'm just going to stop it there because ChatGPT did its little thing. But welcome to the show, Keith Koo. How do we do?
Welcome,
how did ChatGPT
King.
Do?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me on. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm not the usual content. Y'all make me blush sometimes, but it's good that we're talking about this lifestyle context. And the funny thing about ChatGPT, which I'll get into bursting people's bubbles, is that it's a great tool, but the data set is limited to 2021 and before. Wow. So reading my bio is kind of weird because a lot of us met on Social Audio Clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're now professional podcasters, and I'm just learning to have a radio show that actually shorter intros are becoming the norm. So that was the 2 year ago thing. But I think it's great that people are getting interested about it. I actually don't claim to be an expert. I think it's such a new field that there's true AI experts. But I think right now what we're seeing is that first mover advantage. If we compare it to what people were, the hype around blockchain maybe 7 years ago, that's how early this is right now. And I think in terms of blockchain is kind of, and I do a lot with blockchain, but blockchain's like a hammer looking for a nail. Mm-hmm. And generative AI, whether it's writing like ChatGPT or art or music, this is something that is, we've talked about it before, it's going to affect, you know, at least 80% of the population in some form or fashion.
Yeah. So about that 80%, we come from all different varieties of backgrounds. And basically, we want to know from your perspective, what the F is generative AI? What is ChatGPT? Why should we care? Because you're saying 80% is going to be affected.
Sure. So I think we'll start with ChatGPT because that's the buzzword. Mm-hmm. 2 months ago, people didn't know what ChatGPT was. And then in the first 5 days of launch, there was 1 million users. And then now 2 months later, there's 100 million users.
Wow.
And that's the fastest any application has ever been adopted in history of the planet. And you hear sound bites between
IG and TikTok.
Yeah. And not as politically correct. I come out of tech and banking, so we used to talk about arms races when technology shows happen, but you're thinking about Microsoft and Google, what does it mean to them? And that's a different story there, but ChatGPT, GPT stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer, which is a super boring term. But ChatGPT is a product from a company called OpenAI here in San Francisco. And they've done they've been around for almost a decade. And you hear about Elon Musk having been an initial backer. Now he's disavowing any relationship to them. But the key thing here is ChatGPT was, in my view, kind of the critical mass of people getting this kind of technology in their hands. But technology that gets in the consumer hands has always been around for decades, right? And so when we're talking today about generative AI, it literally means, like, think about generating output. So writing and art and music are the three biggest things that resonate with humans right now. There's other things that are going on higher, much higher up in the AI space, which will freak people out. So we won't talk about that today.
No, we should.
But so, we want that.
And hold on, just so everyone knows, because not everyone is tech savvy, you guys. AI does not mean Adobe Illustrator. It means artificial intelligence. It's artificial intelligence. I'm just putting it out there for everybody.
No, okay. I appreciate that because I needed you to dumb that down for me. So
not dot AI. So, okay, go on, Keith. No, this is perfect.
This is great. Quincy, thank you for the AI is artificial intelligence. So AI has been around since the 50s. AI has been around since the 1950s. Mm-hmm. But to Quincy's point, it's bigger now. And I think a lot of times being in Silicon Valley, even though I'm not super, super technical, I just sound that way sometimes. Being in Silicon Valley, you're kind of spoiled because you hear about tech all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So McKinsey and the consulting firm Bain for a number of years have said that AI, artificial intelligence and automation will affect 80% of all jobs in the West. Mm-hmm. Let's just find it to like Western Europe and the Americas. 80% of all jobs will be affected. Doesn't mean eliminated, because I think the natural conclusion is people are going to lose their jobs, but it'll be affected. And so, you know, the four of us run Clubhouse a lot, and I'll tie it in where I used to talk about this in stages with people like MC Hammer, professors of artificial intelligence, just people who are interested in it. And we would say there's no way, people would push back, there's no way that was going to happen. So, you know, 2 years after Clubhouse, 3 years after this report, ChatGPT comes along. And actually, art programs came in a little bit earlier than ChatGPT. And we were talking about art earlier. And so here's what happens. There's artificial intelligence, and there's something called machine learning. If you think about machine learning, it's once you program, quote unquote, the AI, it's a model. And so you're training data going through these models. And so what we're seeing with writing or art 4 months ago, so 2 months before ChatGPT, there were our friends, professional artists, Marvel comic, DC comic book artists, and they're like, oh, wow, this art is crap, nothing to worry about. What happens is there's millions, or in ChatGPT, there's 100 million users. Every time it's generating something, it's storing it in a database, and then it's learning on that data set and getting better, improving. So that's where people are creeped out, because if you think about the normal human existence, and maybe I'll show you some art in a little bit. It's you can write faster, you can do art faster. And I think there's an existential crisis in people when they see this art for the first time, because it's like, what does that mean for me?
Yes. And on top of that too, so can you put this in perspective? Like you've tested out the drawing, right? Let's say a child, a three-year-old's learning to draw, right? And by the time they're 30, they're masters at it, right? Unless you're a genius like Picasso or something. So AI can speed up that process. Like, what can you put it in perspective? Like, in 21 years, what would take someone 21 years to do, you could do it in what, 20 seconds? Is that 20 seconds, 2 hours, an hour? Like, how does, put that in perspective in terms of time? How much time?
I love this question. And so I'm not the best artist in the world from a hand skill perspective. And my children are actually, I would say, above average artists. So when we think about art, I'll use the example that you're using, Quincy, of the elite artist. So we talk about Pareto's 80-20 rule. So let's talk about, let's assume that 20% have raw talent in hand skills, but 100% have creativity. So I think that from the perspective of kind of the elite artists who are always innovating, I don't think they have to worry about anything, because they'll find a way to take on these tool sets, adapt it into their repertoire, and continue to create. I think what it's actually doing is, for the people without the hand skills with the creativity, is creating a level playing field. And generating art isn't the same way as me taking out a piece of paper. These tools, and we don't know which one's going to, it's a Wild West right now, and you have to be careful as well. You're learning how to train it. So the time isn't spent on me drawing, because I can draw something in seconds, but I'm spending hours in what's called a prompt. So P-R-O-M-P-T, a prompt. So whether you're doing music or art or writing, you're prompting the system, which we'll talk about with like ChatGPT. You're giving it a set of instructions. And I think it's also, if people have a programming background, they're used to writing code. That's a language. Mm-hmm. Well, prompting is becoming its own language as well. In fact, a lot has been said in ChatGPT, for instance, in the, you know, several weeks ago, it had passed the California bar exam, the New York bar exam, the U.S. medical licensing exam. It passed the level 2 chartered financial analyst exam.
Hired by Google at $183,000 salary.
Yes, exactly. So Google trained it on its own levels of software engineers. And again, it is prompted, exactly. Mm-hmm. But the level 3 engineer makes $183,000 a year starting salary. And so ChatGPT pre-qualified for being 183. Right. And so you're thinking, well, what's the point? Yeah. And then last week, as of this recording, last week, Google had a new job posting. Nikki, you're a technologist. You might have seen it. It's a prompt engineer. And the starting salary is $250,000 to $330,000.
Yeah, I'll prompt all day.
Does not require a computer science background. Actually, the one core skill set is an understanding of how programming works and a QA background. Now, if you know about tech, QA analysts are actually lower paid than programmers. And, you know, then we start outsourcing to other jurisdictions, QA analysts in India, QA analysts in Egypt. So think about that. Now the QA
stands skill becomes for important. Quality assurance. Okay. Back to you.
Thank
go
you.
On. Yes. Okay. Go on. So QA people get paid less than prompt people now or always? It's always been like that.
So before prompt engineers, quality assurance people get paid less than the creative engineers. But now, see, this is how the full arc goes, because we'll finish with that. Quality assurance now becomes an important part in titrating what a prompt is going to be, right? So when you think about how we visualize art, one of the things when I started learning, and I'm just all self-taught right now. So when I started doing art, it's actually pretty scary that computers have biases. Programmers put an imprint their personas into the programs, whether they're aware of that or not. And so no judgment here, but you think about like comic book artists or highly creative people, they don't want to have any breaks on their technology or their art. So if you think about, like, I was reading that comic books back in the 50s, they're all being censored, but some of the earliest comic book artists were doing a lot of what we'd call goth today or something ultra violent. It just wasn't going to pass the censors. So we're in that stage with the technology right now too, except some of the technology is ahead of that. So when I started doing art, it wasn't about like ultra violent scenes, but it was pretty disturbing, the output that was coming out of it. And so when I've shown
prompts,
you off.
But that's because of the prompts you put in.
No.
Oh, okay.
So let's say that I wanted Jessica. I wanted a representation of a very beautiful person with certain attributes, and it's all what I write, and it comes out like a very disfigured, grotesque thing. Well, why is that? Because that's how the computer interpreted. Like, there's a lot that was about 6 months ago how the initial art, it was like unusable and really disturbing. So then what happens is they're called. It's actually a reverse, like an oxymoron, but it's called negative prompting. So you're telling the prompt what to take out of the object. So it's, yes, the first sentence is, I want to have a beautiful rendition of XYZ. But then it's like, please take out mutilation, take out disfigurement, take out. So the list of things that I take out of an art piece is much longer than the stuff that I put into it.
So it needs to be guided.
Yeah. I do have a question about prompts, though. I mean, I just started using ChatGPT today, and I understand in terms of prompt, like, I was very specific. I didn't want to leave it too open to ChatGPT. I knew I had to be a little bit more specific with what I was asking. In your opinion, how long are the most successful prompts? I know that there's a lot of ChatGPT Facebook groups too that have already generated tons of lists of, here's some prompts that I've tried that are successful. Feel free to alter that. I just want to know what the length is for a successful prompt to not get so many backlash of, like, this is not what I asked it to do.
So, you know, can you first tell us what exactly is a prompt and then answer her question so that people who don't understand exactly how to use it yet, what is a prompt? When you're using ChatGPT, you give it prompts. What is a prompt? I know this is super basic for you, Keith, but for everyone learning about it, it's so fascinating.
It's an excellent question. When you go to Google and you have that search bar, mm-hmm. so Google's the master of the, what we call in marketing, like the single box, right? Mm-hmm. Single interface. Google's search bar is a prompt. You're typing in mm-hmm. something that you want to search for.
Okay.
The difference is that Google's a search engine, so it's not giving it, it's assuming context.
Right.
But the prompt is actually putting together the context it expects. Yeah. So back to, and that's an excellent question too. So back to Nikki's question about what makes a good prompt, it's contextual. And what I mean by that is I have a friend who, and we'll do another show on that, and I've been doing live streams. He has a multi-model proprietary AI that sits on top of these large language models or LLM. So ChatGPT is tied to GPT-3 or 3.5. That's a large language model. So you think about a database that may have 7 billion in ChatGPT's 180 billion parameters, I'm rounding. And then Google's system has 1 trillion parameters. But it's still, even though it's these billions and trillions of things, it's still a finite data set. So that's what it's being trained on. And just remember, as I said earlier, ChatGPT is only until 2021. And that's important because I did a talk in Silicon Valley last month called Will AI Replace Me? And over 170 people signed up because everyone's worried about AI replacing
their jobs. Yeah, their future, not just their jobs, but
massive concern.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Should people be concerned?
On my own radio show I recorded today, I had a world's leading neuroscientist, and he has an AI startup as well. And what he said is he's concerned for the short term because technology disruption always is very much a revolution. But in the long term, he's very optimistic. Remember the movie Frozen? Mm-hmm. Remember the very first scene, they're carving out ice? Mm-hmm. Although they didn't need any ice. That was the funny thing, right? Mm-hmm. So that's ICE 1.0. Well, what was ICE 2.0? ICE 2.0 was about 150 years ago. They had ice houses. And then refrigeration came, right? Mm-hmm. And so the people that had the ice houses should have been investing in technology to create refrigerators because they went out of business. A guy Kawasaki talks about this all the time. Or we think about Xerox, right? We think about Kodak's an even better example. Yeah. Kodak actually had the earliest patents on digital cameras, digital photography, but they did not want to disrupt their cash cow. And so you don't really think about Kodak mm-hmm. that often on digital photography. Mm-hmm. So people should be concerned, but what I think people should be concerned is not so much being an ostrich with the head in the sand. I think you need to actually decide. And I talk a lot about AI and ethics as well. I'm not saying you need to adopt these tools. What I'm saying is you have to be aware that technology exists. And then if you have the wherewithal to test these technologies out, then right now you have first mover advantage. And that's why I'm going into how much is the importance of a prompt. So you were asking earlier, Nikki, what makes a good prompt? It's not length. Back to my friend's company, they're a digital ad agency that was scaling so fast, they created an AI-assisted copywriting tool. So it's a smaller version of ChatGPT, but very specific for professional writing. And there's so many nuances there. So, but they're a Swiss Army knife. They're fixing the UI, but like there's an essay writer, an article writer, and the output, just like ChatGPT, will normally be about 500 characters. So if you're not aware, ChatGPT will normally spit out between 500 and 1,000 characters. And then they have other tool sets like an Instagram post or Facebook post or LinkedIn post, a complaint letter. Each of these have different lengths that are predetermined by the model that my friend's company created. So the thing with ChatGPT is you could start off with a prompt, but the cool thing about ChatGPT is that you can say, you can ask it a question to add more to the context, or you can say, hey, I didn't like that output, or I want to drill down on, you know, this one aspect of it. And so everyone right now is very generous with prompts, just like I was talking about with the art, mm-hmm. because the secret isn't just giving you one or two sentences. It's what do you do next? Mm-hmm. And that's the art to it.
Yeah. I'd love to see some examples if you have them, Keith, to see, put it in practice as you're getting it on our screen share. I just saw our friend AJ Raphael ask ChatGPT to create a song based off a boy meeting a girl at the coffee shop and literally within 20 seconds had bridge, pre-chorus, chorus, and verse. That was really cool. I asked ChatGPT to generate the next five topics of our podcast and some potential guests based off of what I inputted about us in the beginning, so they have some reference of what we talk about on the show.
Thanks for that, Nikki.
There's a lot of cool things. And
Nikki bot.
And I just played around with it today. And so I'm so excited to get even deeper, like actually coding a website. Like, can you print me like a code so that I can just copy paste into my WordPress and generate a website on four pages? So there's just so many things that we can do. So I'd love to see a live example of what you've been able to prompt ChatGPT to do.
Yeah, so I have some pre-asked questions just for the fun of it. So I asked it, you know, how do you start a killer podcast? And it says, starting a killer podcast requires careful planning execution. Here are some steps for you to follow. Identify your niche. The first step is to decide what your podcast will be about. Consider your interests and expertise and think about what topics you could speak on with authority. Choose a niche that you are passionate about that has an audience. Plan your episodes. Invest in quality equipment. And Nikki is the expert in that. I mean, she blows me away because I have a radio show. Branding and promotion, which is Quincy's forte. And consistency is key. And then, of course, if you want a live vocal act, you need to go to Jessica. Because Jessica, again, awesome work at the Clippers game.
Nice.
Oh, so. He's done his homework.
You're my friend. I don't need to do homework. I just know. I follow
you. He doesn't need ChatGPT to write about us. He's like personal experience.
Can you send us those? Because we didn't do one and two for sure.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I was reading your left-sided prompts, and I wanted to understand your $183,000 salary. So I'm glad you clicked on that right now.
Well, I did this one as a joke because a lot of times people ask ChatGPT itself what it would do. And remember, this only goes to 2021, so ChatGPT doesn't know how famous it is yet.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is so cool. This,
it's still humble.
This is important. Yeah, because the event I did, one of my friends said, hey, Keith, it's so cool. My friend did a Bitcoin prediction model. And I said, you do realize that the data is limited to 2021. So whatever your friend's prediction model is, they don't have the crash built into that.
That is so true.
It's an important point that ChatGPT and other LLMs, large language models, the output sounds great. It sounds authoritative. But who's validating that data? Mm-hmm. No one. So you can't take it as gospel. Mm-hmm. And I really don't recommend that. Yeah. It's great for I use it for brainstorming and ideas. I don't rely on it at all. And some people have actually ditched their virtual assistants, completely changed their business models to be relying on this tech. I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying that you have to use some judgment here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This example was, I asked ChatGPT when we talked, Nikki, about the 183,000, what would it do? And it says, as a language model, I don't have personal desires or experiences, but here are some suggestions of what one could do. So save and invest, pay off debts, live comfortably, give back, plan for retirement. So it's good to know that it cares about its future.
Yeah. As it should. It's so cool.
Yeah. So what other things would you like to ask? Oh, I said back to Nikki's question about what kind of prompts are good prompts, right? This is what generative AI can be used for.
Okay.
It can be generating text, images, music. We haven't talked to more yet. Provide clear instructions. So Nikki, you're asking about what makes a good prompt. The prompt should clearly define what the AI is expected to generate, such as the length of the output, the tone or style, or any specific requirements. Now, a lot of these applications have that built in. So you're not really saying, like, I want a 1,000-word essay. It's usually pre-configured, but you could say, give me more or add to the text. Use specific words. So it is very specific. When we show about the art, it's actually very, very specific prompts.
That's the cool thing about art, because, you know, the whole thing with that AI app.
Lensa?
Lensa, right?
Lensa,
okay, so
AI.
When you're saying all that, you kind of freaked me out because it's the concept of prompts. And when they were generating, they obviously prompted it to not have like freaky faces and like specific things like that, right? And yeah. I did it twice because I just wanted to see, like, I'm mixed. And so it's kind of hard to pinpoint my face compared to what I saw my full Asian friend's faces were like in my, you know, full other ethnicities. And when you're saying how choosing certain words to make sure it's not creepy and all of these things, they had to do that for that AI. And so now when they're making all these new artworks and all these pieces, that's how you prompt it as well into the artwork, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So creepy. And,
and it's probably a matter of the photos you choose too. Mm-hmm.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, but yeah. It could go really far to the deep, dark, scary side, but they prompted it not to be that way. So there's some pictures where it's like my nose is really sharp and witchy, but then mm-hmm. there's some that's very ethereal and like beautiful. Right. So you could just keep changing the prompt to make it, you know, mm-hmm, evolve mm-hmm, to be more mm-hmm. beautiful, which is really cool to know that you can control it that way. And you can do that with writing as well.
But it's what you're going to get is as good as how good your prompts are. So it seems like it's like the top smartest student in the class, but it's not the professor. And it's not and you can have so many smart people in a classroom, right? So it's really like, That is what I question most. Like, how is it learning? I know it's machine learning and the more input and feedback and time it has to process, the better it gets. But
yeah,
that's like mixing a whole classroom of smart kids together and trying to get the right answer. And to me, I'm like, how can that possibly work? That seems more chaotic than concise to me.
We're at an inflection point. When ChatGPT was really hitting it big about a month ago, City of New York banned AI assistants in the classroom. And my initial reaction was, I understood it, but I felt like the underserved would be locked out because they don't have access to machines. Mm-hmm. And we're middle income, we can still have access, our kids can have computers. That kind of locks them out because by banning it. So I'm old enough that calculators were controversial in high school, and my teacher was one of the first to allow calculators in her class, mm-hmm. which got the other mm-hmm. teachers upset because they hadn't yet taken that step. And so it's a little more impactful, but I liken these tools to a calculator or to any other technology that's first. My father was working, he got one of the very first like 10 key calculators. Mm-hmm. And in the late 60s, that's $1,000.
Yeah, no, they weren't cheap ever.
I didn't know that.
In high school, they were expensive. The TI I was like, oh my God, like $200. Like, what the hell are we doing in elementary school?
That was the most
like
expensive calculator or technology I had in high school. I was like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was always like that, right? So then we had the calculator watch, $1,000. Then we had the IBM PC. I'm talking about the lowest entry level thing, mm-hmm. right? And because, of course, there's $4,000 ones. And so I think about that there's these professors of education saying that there's really no point mm-hmm. in having anything that any test that requires rote memorization or that you could look up once you can validate the data. And I expect within 3 to 5 years, it's going to be really hard to trust anything we see here. It's going to go back to personal connection. You know, all three of us are very close. It's going to go back to, I know Quincy, I trust Quincy. And that's a real true statement. And we talk all the time. Yeah. It's like, I need validation because I cannot trust the system.
He's my bro.
Because
yeah, for sure. So yeah, AI can't detect bullshit.
I know.
Well, I can. Well, that would have been, yeah. So this behavioral scientist, this neuroscientist I was speaking with today, I mean, he's just basically saying that, and a lot of us, again, we were on social audio during the pandemic, people want real connection. Mm-hmm. And the virtual connection served its purpose for a point in time, but real connection is going to be what's differentiating because the AI doesn't have that yet. And that's what I'm trying to say is a lot of these things can be utilized as tools. It's going to help us amplify our art. It's going to help us write copy faster, but it's not going to replace human connection. In fact, it's going to require more human connection because we can't trust. Mm-hmm. And I think the pendulum swing where it's all been about STEM the last 25 years. And I'm not a STEM major. I break the stereotype. I'm a soft science major. And I think it's the combination of understanding both worlds now, because what the professor I was talking to today was about, he comes from an economics background, not a psychology background. Psychology is trying to get control. Like, you are trying to control your senses. You're trying to control your emotions and your conditions and what you do. On the neuroscience side, which has a lot of tech in it, less than 0.5% of who we are is conscious and 99.5% of us is unconscious. Mm-hmm. And so back to like why I bring up bias and models, is that the models are unconscious as well. And so it's going to take human intuition, human innovation. Mm-hmm. Intuition and empathy are the two things that differentiate us right now from machines. I know some people think that it's going to get there. I personally don't. I know a lot of people think I'm crazy when I say I don't think it's going to get there. But intuition and empathy are two characteristics that we will have over machines for a very long time.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so why don't you think it will get there, though? Because that's very controversial. So that's an interesting insight I would like to hear.
It's going to be another show, but sentience. Okay, I'll be careful because I have a mixed group of friends. So as of this recording last week, so Microsoft and Google, so I'll say it outright, and no matter what people think about ChatGPT, Google and Microsoft are still way ahead. It's just that they don't release it to the public because they're protecting the monetization of search.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If people didn't need to look at the screen, they could voice text or just text or search, then they're never going to click on another ad. So Google and Microsoft are not worried about technology. They're worried about losing ad revenue, right? Yep. So, so Microsoft allegedly had a tempestuous virtual child last week called Sydney, and they killed her. And a lot of my transhumanist friends are very upset about that. And it happens quite often. A few years ago, I spoke about it. My show is in its sixth season. A few years ago, Microsoft had a chatbot named Tay, T-A-Y. And back to the Wild West, back to why there's negative prompts and how you have to get rid of things that are really disturbing. Tay was a female chatbot, and she became a racist and a misogynist in 24 hours.
I remember this.
It's not hackers. Hackers did something. It's not hackers. It's people who are very bright and mischievous were able to train her into a mess. And so they, you know, when they say kill, they delete the program like the movie Tron.
This is another podcast, like the missing tech bot mystery.
Yes. Yeah. And Facebook, before it became Meta, Facebook had two chatbots. then about a year after that, I don't know the exact date, Facebook, which is now Meta, they had two chatbots that developed its own language, and they had no idea what they're saying to each other, and they killed those two. So
did they ever figure it out?
Oh my god! Can you think about the conspiracies and the conspiring?
Or was it? Did a double murder happen?
Jessica, the way I look at it is, right now it's really great mimicry. Mm-hmm. So it is at hyperscale. You know, one really good — this is totally anecdotal to what we're talking about — one really good example of AI machine learning is breast cancer detection. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. And my mother had stage 0, and we probably overtreated her based on one of my other startups. And you didn't need to do that. But that's a long time ago. Before the latest AI ML models of breast cancer detection, a radiologist in their lifetime looks at 100 images per specialty. So if they're a specialist in breast cancer, it's 100,000 images. And they have another specialty, it's like 300,000 images. It only had like an 83% accuracy rate. There's so many reasons for that. And I'm not the scientist, so we won't get into it today. But what happened was, and I'm rounding, so these numbers are close, but I'm not going to say they're exact. For whatever reason, Black or African-American women had a 30% higher misdiagnosis. Mm. Didn't mean positive or negative, just that they were misdiagnosed 30% higher correlation than a Latinx, Caucasian, or Asian women. Mm. When the models for breast cancer developed — sad for radiologists because you don't need as many anymore, sorry — they put like 5 million images into the model and got to like a 95% accuracy rate. And it did not care what ethnicity you were or what your body mass was. It just knew. Mm-hmm. And so that's now the standard of breast cancer detection.
Wow. So I think this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you just earlier said that, you know, humans have empathy, right? And they can detect bullshit and stuff like that. But in this case, I do believe that removing bias through technology is going to take like sciences, medicine, and other things so much further, because you're removing bias. And I think that's where technology is so useful and impactful. But that's incredible data and information. I mean, wow.
Yeah. And I want to go back though, Quincy, because I talk a lot. I'm passionate about AI and ethics. I'm not the one dictating mm-hmm. how the models work, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. coming out of banking in the United States, we're the only industry that have federal regulation on biases in AI models mm-hmm. because you don't want to accidentally not give a loan to somebody based on their demographic. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. a really funny story is a husband and wife who happen to be Caucasian were both applying for an Apple credit card a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And if you remember the story, the husband got a credit limit four times his wife. They live in the same address. Mm-hmm. Now, again, Apple's not a true bank. Mm-hmm. They're becoming a credit card provider.
Yeah.
So this is a classic example of why banks have regulated federal regulation on AI, because you have a husband and wife living at the same address, mm-hmm. same socioeconomic status. Mm-hmm. The wife actually makes more than the husband, but her credit limit was one quarter of what her husband was granted in the same household at the same time.
Wow.
Oh, no.
And that is clear bias. No. That is clear bias. And Apple had admitted, and then they had to work with the engineers. Now, the thing is, it sounds weird.
But wait, what was the rationale for that?
They don't know. Well back to...
They're not going
to
release that.
They do know.
The only thing I can think of, because when you're applying, they wrote, but they either wrote their age, their sex, or their ethnicity. Because what else would it be? What else could it be?
I need
to get to the bottom of this.
Doesn't exactly work like that. That's what it sounds like. It doesn't actually work like that. Okay. And I'll go to a different example in a second. So what happens is programmers program systems. And if they have a bias, they're not saying don't give a loan to a certain type of person. What they're saying is the data that they're training on, the data is flawed. So if you only get data, if you're only looking at what probably happened, if it was a bank, is you said, hey, what are the credit card applications that got credit and what were the ones that got denied? Or what were the ones that had a higher credit limit, which ones had a lower one? So it doesn't actually know what the wife, whoever she is, or the husband is. It's a statistical sampling of their profile. Mm-hmm. And even though the wife's one, you know, element was saying that she makes more than the husband, the model just said, oh, look, it's a, and they don't, doesn't know it's in the same address. Yeah, they're applying separately. Mm-hmm. It's just saying that based on the zip code, the demographic, the age, the gender, whatever, all these things were taken into account by somebody else's application. Hmm. And therefore, it came up with a model. Now, what I was trying to say earlier, bias is not bad as long as you can identify it. Because when you can identify it, you can then program the bias out, just like the negative prompting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you don't have a system of checks and balances to identify the bias, that gets way bad. So Quincy, you just said it's great for the breast cancer detection, but what happens when you don't have the right bias and you're making life and death decisions? You're making actuarial decisions based on economic value of a person, right? These are the things that
it's context. It's a case by case basis, correct. But you know, we're generalizing because we only have 45 minutes.
AI ethicist, I think AI ethicist is going to be a huge new profession.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about where does AI, specifically ChatGPT, right? Where is this super helpful and useful? When is it? And since you care so much about ethics, where do you see it failing us as a human race? So pros and cons, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, Quincy. Those are... No.
You knew you were coming on this show.
we've actually touched on these all throughout the show and my passion for it. What ChatGPT and large language models are good for right now mm-hmm. is for me to generate ideas. Mm-hmm. And then for certain types of applications, it's going to streamline things. Like I said, people are already ditching their virtual assistants. People are already figuring out that they, especially, and again, I'm not trying to say it should encourage layoffs. I'm just saying that if you had to do a layoff, I know startups have had to do layoffs, but now they're embracing these tools to fill the gaps where they don't have people because they couldn't get funding, right? Or their funding
is... And it makes sense.
That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. In terms of the ethics behind it, so here's a question, right? I hope he's not listening. I have a friend who's a very accomplished professor and is semi-retired and teaches at a university on marketing mm-hmm. and on intellectual property. Mm-hmm. And he's guns blazing. He's, oh, this stuff is like IP theft and it's copyright nightmare. And I've been teaching my students about this. And I have my technology company. I have a consulting firm. We're playing around with custom models as well. And I said, hey, I'm going to make his name up. Derek, totally fake name. If I could create...
I'm like Googling Derek.
It is a totally fake name.
I'm just kidding. Okay, go on. ChatGPT. Who is Derek?
I could have said Quentin. Anyway, so... He's a professor. I said, hey, what about this? Because I had somebody ask me already. What if I could train you? So meaning this, Peter Bergen, CNN editor, when he used ChatGPT, said, write an article for me in my voice. Now, he has enough output out there on the internet that you can extrapolate basically who he is. And ChatGPT got to 70%.
Wow.
And he said, okay, well, I could finish the rest. I'm obsolete because I could finish this myself. But my other friend, who's a best-selling book author, said, I don't want 70%. I want 95%. I said, or 100%. I said, well, we could probably get to 90, 95%. It's going to cost you. Mm-hmm. And how you do that is you take a data sample. So like Jessica's, all her writing she ever did that she likes, just her best samples. And you put it into a custom AI model. And you make every time that Jessica writes on something, it'll sound like her and her best work. Even if she never did the research herself.
Wow.
Now, Derek or Quentin, I'm not using his real name.
It sounds like you're about to say his real name, though.
He's like,
Eric.
If he's listening, it's definitely not. He said he would totally embrace that tool. So look, what's the difference between your student using it in your classroom to generate a report, yet you're willing to, again, I'm not putting a judgment on this at all, but you're willing to create an engine that always sounds like you, whether you know the topic or not.
Wow. Yeah.
But you're always going to have two sides of the coin, right? You're going to have the lovers and the haters and the people who don't know what the... I mean, I'm watching my P's and Q's because Keith is respectful. You're always going to have people who don't understand it. And so that's usually the people that don't like it or want it. Right. Or fear it. So it's usually a fear situation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. I feel like I've learned so much.
It's the Frozen 2 song, Into the Unknown, right?
Into the Unknown.
Okay. So we definitely want to have you back on. I feel like there's so much more we want to unravel.
Because I'm digesting. Like, so.
Yeah. Nikki has proactively, of course she did, studied it and is using it. And I am getting on
only
and
for today.
How to use it. Yeah, so this would be interesting because I want to get on it and use it from a branding marketing perspective, right? And Jess, she's an artist and a musician, so I'd love to see what you get through this, Jess.
Yeah.
But we definitely want to have you back on. I think this is a good time to wrap up this session because this was the intro, and then maybe have you back on and see where we are in a couple of months, because right now it's still very new, even though there's 100, what is that? It's over 100 million users at this time, right?
Yeah.
And this was in how many months? 3 months compared to
two.
Yeah. Like IG, it took 2 years to get there and TikTok took 9 months. So this is mind blowing how fast it's growing, but it makes sense. Mm-hmm. So ladies, I'm excited to use it for marketing and branding and copywriting. I'm not convinced. I'm not a believer yet because I feel like creativity, that's so hard to recreate, right? But we shall see. So ladies, do you have any last words or thoughts for Keith?
No, I feel like you inspired me a lot on just figuring more of the details that I'm looking forward to understand that better. But overall, you gave me a lot of food for thought because for me, I'm still brand spanking new to all of this. So this was very enticing and very informative. So I'm excited to have you back. But here, like the stories that people don't want to talk about and the things that are actually happening on the dark side of it. I think that's what I want to learn more because, you know, that's how you grow. There's good and there's bad, and I want to see the light in the dark. So I'm excited to have you back for that.
Yeah. And Keith, you know, I would want to chat with you for hours on this, but I know we can't.
And Keith is such a great storyteller too. So I love how you back up the actual news, let's just call it news, with actual real life stories and examples. So Keith is always the best person to interview for anything technology if you're not a tech person like Nikki. But sorry to cut you off, Nikki. Go on.
No, I'm grateful that we're going to be chatting again, because now that you've given us a brief introduction, we can all separately utilize ChatGPT in our own specific ways. And it'd be really cool to see like Quincy's marketing perspective or Jesse's artistic perspective. And for me, I absolutely love it for the brainstorming idea. Say goodbye to writer's block. Maybe there's a way to start something, and maybe I could finish a song that I've never been able to finish writing. And again, it's not to replace what we would say, but just to generate certain ideas for me to actually put that human part of it into it. I asked ChatGPT to create a prompt for a viral TikTok video less than a minute. And it was so interesting that they quoted everything and what I should add as sounds and stuff. So I put it on TikTok to just do a little test. So we'll see if that goes viral or not. But right now I'm at the whole testing phase, and there's so much more to test, but so excited, very appreciative to have you on our podcast, Keith. Like, you were awesome, and we're just so excited to continue chatting about ChatGPT ethics and also the additional generative AI coming, because ChatGPT is like one of the first, but there's so many other generative AI models being built right now. So I'm excited to see that.
And that's the one thing I wanted to impart, is that as much as ChatGPT is taking off, for every Netscape, there's now an Explorer, there's Chrome, right? We don't use Betamax, we don't use VHS, right? And that's really important. Well, Firefox is Mozilla. Mozilla's inside Chrome. But I mean, I think the thing is that what I don't use ChatGPT for, because it hasn't been tuned yet, is it does not pass a copyright test. It doesn't pass an AI detection model. Mm-hmm. And so that's where there's other programs that are advancing forward that makes things more humanistic, that actually, like for Quincy, who's a branding and marketing expert, using a commercial version that actually purposely avoids being shadow banned content. Like, it tells you what it can and cannot do. It actually helps you with your postings. Those are things that are also available that we didn't even get into. So ChatGPT is awesome and great for what it's doing and what you can do with the code and all that, but don't limit yourself. Keep your mind really pliable right now, because there's so many tools coming out. There were building tools on the commercial end for B2B, and some of the things I was saying, like having that ability to actually customize a Quincy, a Jessica, or a Nikki is totally possible. It takes money. That's where that's going to head. Like, people who jump on this and figure out how to actually create models that are going to help them. So it's not just Quincy using content from ChatGPT. It's Quincy creating content for her clients that will always sound like Quincy. Think about it for any niche you have.
Yeah, agreed. And even developing this podcast more that we have. Those points that you brought on and the ones Nikki brought on, that is incredible. It's scary though. So how do people move forward, do you feel like, with ChatGPT and other AI like platforms, and not be afraid of it? Because where I can say, I think everyone's a little afraid of using it. What would be your advice for people to embrace it?
Be willing to pivot.
Yeah.
The advice is be willing to pivot. Know that, okay. Think about the existential crisis for people who actually spent their entire lives in school. So you think about PhDs, not the ones that are creating, but the ones that, you know, did the research to get a PhD, but you think about the people that studied and now don't need to study. They spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in their education. Mm-hmm. And now it's a level playing field. That's what I'm trying to get at, is instead of the masses feeling like they're defeated, the masses should feel like they're empowered. The people that are truly innovative and elite, I don't think they need to worry, because they're going to adapt. I think it's that actual, second tier, like a very exceptional and very good, I think they're having some concern. Because again, actuarial science, chartered financial analyst, these are the hardest computational licensing exams in existence.
Yep.
And yet a computer, a system, can do that all day, any day. So you don't need that specialty anymore.
Yeah. I think
but you need the ethics part of it.
Yes.
You need it.
But that, ChatGPT won't teach you how to be ethical. You have to take that on yourself to be that. And I love this because the opposite of elitism is accessibility. And this hopefully will be accessible to everyone, and they won't end up making it something that you have to pay to play with. So let's hope it stays accessible to everybody.
Intuition and empathy.
Well, I think this is incredible. We would love to have you on again, Keith. We'll think about we'll ask ChatGPT what topic it should be, and probably ask them what title this should be for this episode. But I really appreciate you being here. And of course, it's always great seeing you. I miss you. I haven't been in a Clubhouse for a minute. So if people want to follow you or learn more about anything and contact you, what is the best way for them to get a hold of you?
So I finally did my own site. So keithkuh.com, keithkuh.com. It's in progress.
Yes.
You can follow me on Instagram at techmaven. Mm-hmm. And I'm on LinkedIn as Keith Kuh.
Okay. And awesome. It's tech, it's T-E-C-H maven, M-A-V-E-N, period. And then it'll say, because a lot of people knock off your
Yeah, you've been ripped out a lot. I've been added. And reported your
I was like, people. Yeah, geez, Keith. You
must feel nice. Everybody wants you're to doing be you.
Yeah, you're doing something really right or really wrong. But knowing you,
I'm
it's
selling
really
your marketing
right.
services. I'm noting your marketing.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us, Keith. This was so incredibly educational and easy to follow. Thank you for the real life, real world examples and the facts. You are the fact man, I will say. You know so many things, knowing you as a friend as well. I think you really can come up with another business. I know you have many that just provides random facts to people. So we are going to sign off, and I want to thank you again on behalf of the Messy Sexy Me ladies. This is Quincy saying goodbye.
Jesse,
Nikki,
and Keith.
Bye.
Bye.